Welcome to The Good, The Scares and The Rugby. This is episode 4. I'm Alma Smith and we're bringing you the show together with our friends at Allianz. Yes, it's episode 4. So if you missed any of the other three, then make sure you go back and listen or watch. Welcome back, Mike Tyndall, dad to Lord Lucas. How's the baby doing?
Yeah, very well. Thank you. I was disappointed to have missed last show, but I was needed. Obviously, I play a pivotal role in my fatherly duties of what would have been a 3-day old then. So he's been great, actually. He's sleeping okay, so he hasn't been an absolute nightmare as yet. So fingers crossed we have a good one. But I don't know. I'm waiting for something to go wrong. We got lucky with the first two in terms of being sleepers, and hopefully it's just our natural relaxed way of life that he will fall into that. But I don't know, because it's a boy, I have questions.
Oh, so many questions. Speaking of questions, Emily is here with a new background because she is in camp in Doncaster, full on Six Nations prep. She has literally squeezed us into her crazy diary at the moment. What's the atmosphere like, Emily?
Yeah, it's cool. I made sure I made my bed so my mum couldn't give me any more diff about my background. But it's good. It's good. It's nice to be actually on like a game camp. We've been on loads of camps that are just training camps, and it's hard to kind of sometimes stay motivated because you don't necessarily see the game. But we're now on a game camp, so into game week. Just excited to get going. I feel like this Six Nations has been a long time coming with the delay and whatnot. So, we're just excited to get out there.
Did we have a hand sanitation transition before you... I just want to make sure you are sticking to full protocols because they seem to be quite regular on your schedule.
100%. They're every, I don't know, half an hour or so. The ball gets in. Yeah. I mean, the schedule it's probably more militant that it plays out, but I suppose they have to do it that way. Yeah, there's lots of COVID rules and restrictions, but it means we can do what we do. So we'll crack on.
Scares, you'll obviously listen to the good, the bad than rugby. And obviously we were very disappointed that you get your name in the title of ours. But now that we have merchandise, you step your game up, girl. You might have your name on the show, but I have the Lord's work. We need to figure out what your t-shirt's going to be. This is the next challenge. We have to get ourselves some merch on this show.
I was going to say, it's one thing having your name in a title, but I don't think I could then walk around with a t-shirt that says it. I think that's... way bigger step too far for me.
You've got to live it.
Yeah, no pay, no gaino is a pretty catchy one. I might actually get one of those. And I think it's time we need to welcome our guest because she's organically just joining this conversation. She's ready to have her name on a t-shirt as well. I mean, she is so highly regarded in the rugby world. It's amazing to welcome multiple Grand Slam winner, World Cup winner, former teammate of Emily's, Cat Merchant on the good, the scares and the rugby. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
What would your t-shirt say?
Live the dream.
Yeah, live the dream, 100%. Got it. Scaz has nailed it.
Explain the story.
Thanks, Scaz. I'm so glad I came on. Basically, after my first cap, I decided I was going to get a tattoo. And then my first motivational video I watched when I was about 16, it was really cool, like watching all the women play. And then at the end, it was really powerful, like live the dream. And then like a lovely rose, great. So I was like, I'm going to go get that. And came back. They covered it up straight away, kind of didn't really talk about it. They're like, definitely don't take this plaster off for 2 days, like, et cetera. So, okay, fine. I'll listen to them, trust them. It was only when I took it off and it said, lift the dream. And so I've had it for years and years and years. And it was only when I was retired, I was like, I think it's time lift the dream went. So kind of covered it up instead.
What is it now?
Oh, it's kind of loads of roses. So kind of a big, is it even there? Yeah, okay, so like a big kind of...
What do you mean, is it even there? It's ginormous, because the whole right hand side of your arm, your shoulder. Oh, is it there? Can you see it? Yes.
It's when I got the cover up, and I said, she's like, what do you want? And I went, basically as small as possible that covers it. And then when she was doing it, I was like, why is that on my neck? Like, it's just like, it is not as small as possible. It is massive. But I don't have much luck with tattoos. Let's just leave it at that.
It's one of my favourite stories. I'm sorry we went in so early, but it is one of my favourites.
It was a team thing. Yeah, like live the dream was the thing. So yeah, it's all good.
I would trademark that. I would totally run with it. I mean, it's not your fault.
Yeah,
live the dream.
Well, you've got your name for your book. You've got your name for it's all given to you. I mean, live the dream. It's amazing. Just got to figure out which accent around the world would give you that sounds like it's still live the dream, but live the dream. I wonder what accent that would be.
I'll leave that for you to work out.
I'll figure it out.
Okay, so it's a very big week. It finally is here. Six Nations, the Women's Six Nations kicks off on Saturday. Emily, I've asked you about the energy and kind of how things are. How are you doing this week? What kind of level of preparedness are you at now? Do you just kind of stay loose and cheerful until game day?
Yeah, try to. I think, obviously, as I said, it's good to get into game week because it, you know, you're focused on something, you've got that goal, you've got that target, whatever. But then game weeks get really busy as well. And it's not so much on the field because obviously you don't want to be overtraining and overworking, but the off-field side of stuff really comes in. So obviously part of leadership groups, you have to, all the analysis stuff that goes into it, the preparation, everything obviously that goes into building up to a big game week, sorting out the game plan, all of that sort of stuff, which naturally takes quite a lot of time around all of your other meetings, your training, your recovery, all of that sort of stuff. So they are quite long days, but luckily, hopefully everybody in the UK has been experiencing this, the sun has been out, so that's been really nice. So we've been, there's a couple of balconies here in the hotel, so happily just sitting out on there doing some of the jobs. So it's been good.
Has it been a bit weird sort of adjusting to it being a truncated format still, and there's only been, because you've only got the first two weekends and you get a week off before you go into the finals day, right? So has that been a bit weird, it not being the usual format?
Yeah, I suppose we've probably not felt it yet. The old cliche of one game at a time, Mike. We're only focused on what's ahead of us.
Media handbook 101.
I'm into it. Yeah, so yeah, we genuinely are just looking at Scotland at the moment. I think potentially by the end, you might be a bit like, oh, it's finished, because you're used to a much longer process. But yeah, I mean, we'll see. I think I definitely would have preferred the traditional setup and playing all those games and stuff. But I also understand why that's not appropriate this year.
Yeah. Is that basically why they're not doing it? Because obviously, because it was originally because of the World Cup, but obviously now that's gone. Is it COVID that they've put it down to and leave it?
I think there's a few things. I think there's obviously COVID. I think the fact that lots of other nations aren't professional. So obviously we're professional. We're very fortunate to be that, but a lot of the other nations aren't. So actually keeping them as secure as possible in COVID life around having to go to and from work and travel and whatnot, I think that's obviously quite difficult. I think originally as well, it was done around the World Cup qualifiers, which Ireland, Italy and Scotland were involved with. Now the World Cup's been postponed, that's not happening either. So I think at the time there was lots of different reasons, some of which obviously aren't apparent anymore, but it is what it is. We'll figure it out. Hopefully it means the weather will be nicer. So we're not playing in February when it was snowing. We're now playing in spring. So that's what we're holding on to.
We are missing some of what we have come to know the Women's Six Nations to be, Kat. You're missing out on the whole experience of being on the inside. When you're watching it now from the outside, what are the emotions like? What is it you miss about a week like this?
It's the feel in camp and kind of, I was never part of the strategy meetings and stuff like that, the leader stuff. I was just left to run around on the wing. But it was just kind of, it was just good fun, and it's all good banter with your mates and just that excitement of leading up towards a game. I'm quite lucky now, I get to do a lot of the commentary stuff, so I'll be heading out to Italy actually for the girls for the second game, and it's the anthem that always gets me though. When they sing the anthem, I just still get goosebumps now, and then you're like, oh wait, no, I'm not playing, even though it's been years. And kind of I just think how far the game has come though. Like, I watch it now and some of the hits that go in, they actually make me wince, and I used to still want to be playing, and now I'm kind of like, oh, they're actually hitting each other really hard. But and the skill level in general and just the whole competition, I think, has really stepped up. And I think one great thing from this format, although we want to see the full traditional way, it does mean that potentially it looks at, like, all things going as expected, England-France final, which is the one that people want to see. And sometimes it's been that game's been up first, which has almost been the grand slam decider. So at least this way, the really exciting game, in kind of my opinion, will be at the end, with it obviously going that way.
I think the other thing that we, is really exciting is obviously we're not alongside the men now, so we're not having to compete for, I know there's not crowds and whatnot, but we're not having to compete for the social channels or the TV channels or the kickoff times and all that sort of stuff. So that's something that excites me in terms of actually the pickup that it gets when we don't have to compete with the men on the same weekends and whatnot. And what that looks like, I don't know, the proof will be in the pudding. It is such a shame that that won't be quantified with crowds, but at the same time, hopefully the coverage will be huge.
Primetime TV with BBC on the last Saturday, isn't it? So step it up, no pressure.
Yeah,
no
pressure. Yeah, no. Yeah. Yeah, but that's awesome. Getting terrestrial TV in is amazing. It means, you know, people can tune in. People will stumble across it as well, won't they, naturally, when they're flicking around. And it means my gran can watch it as well, so she'll be well chuffed.
So there's two pool format. It's England, Scotland, Italy in the one, France, Ireland and Wales in the other. Kat, you've already kind of said that you think, you know, people want to see an England France final, obvious favorites, I'm guessing. The dark horse team, who are you looking to for a big show in this tournament?
So I guess in England's pool, I mean, you never know. Sometimes you don't know what Italy are going to do, and they can pull out some really big performances. And, you know, they have finished second in the Six Nations before. So, they, you know, we know that they can perform. So it's always interesting to see kind of what they bring. And I guess kind of from the other pool, I think Wales, I think they've been doing a lot of things behind the scene and they're kind of really building their squad. So they might be kind of a dark horse one from the other side.
With France, are we a little bit, obviously with the postponement of the World Cup, the sevens are sort of kicked in for them, haven't they? And they're over in Dubai for two tournaments. Is that disappointing from your point of view? Or I don't know, are some of the players coming back to play in it? How are they going to be? Are they going to be in a different conditioning sort of level? Are they going to be full mind focused on this? Or how do you think that's going to go?
You never quite know with France, do you? But
no, you don't, even when they're fully concentrating on something. So no chance, think, now, have you?
Yeah. I think, obviously, they, with the World Cup being postponed, it gives them time to focus on the sevens. They've not qualified for the Olympics yet as a seven side, which is quite a shock in terms of where they're ranked in sevens. They should, you know, should be at the Olympic Games. So I appreciate why that's such a big focus for them. But loads of their players flip between the two. They don't necessarily kind of specify and separate that often. I think even in the autumn, we played against one side one week that had some of their seven girls, and then the next week they weren't there. So it's quite a fluid thing for them. But yeah, I think they're over in Dubai at the moment, which I'm sure is really tough for them. But yeah, they'll be back at some point, whether it's during the Six Nations, I'm not sure, or whether it's obviously a bit later on. But I think that sevens campaign for them and getting to the Olympics is obviously huge on their agenda.
Let's talk about being, what, at least the favourites, England, Emily. How much pressure that adds? Does it make it better? Does it make you uncomfortable?
I don't know. I think, again, trying not to go too much into media mode, but we do try and concentrate on ourselves. So obviously, we'll, whatever game it is that we're playing, it's still trying to focus on us and our performances and stuff. And I know that's the boring answer, but it is true. I think we're very aware of the competitions that we've got coming up. Obviously, Scotland this weekend, the last result they had was drawing against France, who are arguably one of the best sides in the world. So there's certainly no taking anything for granted for that game. But I think most of all, we're just excited to get back out there. You know, we understand the position that we're in at the moment in terms of the context of the country and, you know, the pandemic and whatnot. So I think we're all just looking forward to getting out there and actually playing some rugby, and then hoping that actually what we do is a really good product and everyone enjoys it. And yeah, we can keep rolling from there.
With Simon, does he focus a lot on oppositions, or is it all about you? What sort of coach is he? Is it all about just focusing on your own stuff, making sure your attack plans and don't worry about what they're going to do, have a little look at them, or is it details on both?
Yeah, details on both. I think it is largely focused on us, and it will be kind of tweaks to what we do because of what they might bring to the party. You know, the Scottish girls, for example, a lot of them play in the Allianz Premiership in, obviously, in England. So a lot of us know them pretty well. There's a decent contingent at Loughborough. There's a few down at Quinns. So we do know those girls quite well, and they are really, really good individual players. Obviously, they perhaps don't have the time together that we do, but we do know that, you know, they're really good players. So yeah, we've got to be right on it for the game. And we're just excited. The Cat knows what it's like. Six Nations running out there. Yes, the crowds aren't there, and we can keep talking about that. But at the same time, you're still pulling on the white jersey, and yeah, it's awesome.
The Allianz Premier 15s have added so much in terms of, you know, how it's matured and the level of fan interest. I mean, the number of people who I see kind of commenting along, watching the live streams from all over the place. Kat, it's been so encouraging to see that, but it's also obviously changing the standard that we expect from the Women's Six Nations, because you've now got this league and you've got girls playing from all over in these Premier 15s side. Today I also saw a story that there are rumors of a TV pickup eventually. What is the impact that you think that this premiership season will have on the Six Nations when it gets going now? What will we see?
I think it's huge because every year I think the premiership has just improved in standard. I think that there's always been kind of a strong 15 in each team, but then maybe what was behind it and leading into it wasn't quite as strong. Whereas now, you know, unfortunately players pick up injuries and then you're like, oh, this player's out. Oh, but they've got this one. And, you know, looking at the Surrey Squins game at the weekend and both teams had injuries, but looking at the team sheet, you're just like, that is a full strength 15 from both that you would happily put out in any team. And I think that the kind of, obviously with the rules and law changes that we've been playing in England, it's going to be really exciting to kind of see how it transitions back into full kind of rugby. Because obviously there's been a lot less scrums, a lot less kind of driven lineouts. And I'm hoping that that kind of, I mean, obviously those will come back in and are really, really important parts of the game, but it has sped it up definitely. And there's been more ball in play time. And I think that will just make it kind of a lot more exciting, even more so than normal to watch.
Obviously Kat and I were never anywhere near a scrum, but it will take a huge toll on the front rows, especially, you know, we've seen Amy Kakane and all her full skill set chip and chasing down the wing, scoring these worldy tries, but actually will they have the same amount in their legs after they've done 10 scrums that they haven't been doing week in, week out? I know, Kat, you probably can't answer that question, but I do think that will have a huge impact on those girls. Obviously, they've been practicing, but like we all know, you can practice as much as you like until you're in a game. It's different gravy, isn't it?
Definitely. And I think it is more draining, like for the maybe twice in my life I've been in a mall, but it is just really tiring, and contact is a very different fitness and to kind of just running general fitness. So I think it will be really difficult. I think probably won't impact the kind of first half, but even just going from 70 minutes to 80, like that's a sudden jump of kind of time in play. So I think it's going to be really interesting to watch, but also an opportunity for the front row. As you said, they live to scrum and they haven't had much opportunity to do so. So they're going to be really excited to kind of have a go back at that as well.
I mean, Scouts, you're not touching the ball. So do you have a scrum coach actually, Scaz?
Well, yeah, we have a forwards coach, Mark Luffman. So okay.
Does he always want to scrum long and get penalties, or
I went down the other day for lunch, they were out on the grass just outside the hotel in their boots and full kit doing some like 3v3s, 5v5s, and I just like pop my head over the balcony, like sipping on my water, thinking, yeah, what on earth is going on? But yeah,
shake your coffee at them, guys.
Yeah.
Right. Kat, obviously, Sarah, I know because Scaz probably can't answer this because it's talking about her captain. Sarah Hunter's coming back in after a long layoff. Do you think she'll just hit the ground running? How hard do you think it'll be for her to sit straight in? And then is she going to be the long-term captain moving forward, going into the World Cup and everything?
Yeah, I think she's such a hard worker that even though, okay, she's had a long time out, she'll have just been working so hard off the pitch, and she's someone that holds standards so high that I've kind of got no doubt that she'll be able to come straight in. I think it's going to be tough on her body, definitely, but I think that she'll just put kind of everything into it, and she's, you know, been captain for a long time and has led the team so well. I think that, yeah, she'll slot back in quite nicely.
I think just on sense, like, she's somebody who works unbelievably hard. Like, she's probably the most stringent person. Obviously, she's been rehabbing for a long time. She's timing her rest. She's doing everything to the absolute nth degree to get herself back. And she's been really, really unlucky. She's had three on the bounce. It's just meant she's not been able to play since September or whenever it was. But she is a phenomenal player for us. You know, we've got a lot of forwards now that do the flashy stuff, or, you know, make 20, 30 metre breaks that perhaps you don't expect from a traditional forward. And Sunt perhaps won't do that, but I kind of liken her to the, like, a Richard Hill. She does the stuff that you don't see, but you absolutely need them to do. And her first game back at the weekend against Exeter, first thing she did was absolutely wallop someone, and I could hear it from the 13 channel, and I winced a little bit and was like, oh yeah, fair, she's back. So yeah, she's most definitely hit the ground running, and it's awesome to have her back in the fold.
She replaced Katie Daly-McLean, who retired recently. How does the retiring from the WhatsApp group work in the women's side? Because I know that the Hask has talked about being kicked out of the men's England WhatsApp group when he retired.
He was kicked out whilst he was still playing. And then forcing his way back in. But
yeah, Katie hung on for a bit. You know what it's like. You get a bit of inside info, don't you? And you're obviously not around the team, but you get a few little bits on WhatsApp. So, but yeah, then ultimately she did get booted out. So every now and again, I'll get a little message being like, what does this mean? Or I've heard that, what does this mean? You know, she wants to still be involved and know what's going on naturally. But yeah, she's been hoofed out of the WhatsApp group for sure.
I love the brutality of it.
Just goof. Yeah. Who's the most fun at the moment? Who's the person who overdoes it on the WhatsApp group right now?
At the moment, probably Bots and Poppy are going well at the moment. They've set up like a little tuck shop. So Hannah Bottoman and Poppy Cleo, they've set up a little tuck shop. Obviously, we're in COVID camp, so we can't leave. Normally, when you're in camp, you could pop out for a coffee, or if you, I don't know, you ran out of snacks, you can go and pick up something, or you've chocolate craving, go and get it from the garage. You can't do that. So they've preempted a little bit Rodney and Del Boy style. So they've brought a load of some chocolate, and I think they've gone cream eggs and some cold drinks. So they're on the hard sell at the moment. They're offering offers, they're offering delivery to your door out of hours. It's a 24-hour service. So yeah, they're adding a bit of fun to the party at the moment. Buy a chocolate.
Yeah. Katie was shaking your head there.
I guess it's taking advantage, but like, it does, they're always messing around, aren't they? And they do like food challenges and stuff like that, and just seems like the kind of jokers of the group.
It sounds really like daft, doesn't it? And but little things like that, when you're in this environment, do make people smile. You know, they've made little posters about, I think they're giving away a free cream egg. So you can give someone a free cream egg in the team, and you can add a little anonymous note to it. And I don't know which way that could go. Hopefully everyone goes nicely with it. But just things like that, like they just make camp a little bit more sociable, interesting. Like, they're cheap laughs. It's, you know, it's sometimes a tough place to be. So yeah, those two are good value.
Have you received an anonymous cream egg?
Not yet. I'm hoping I open my door in the morning and there's just a pile. But yeah.
So this is all just a play for getting cream eggs, right?
Surely there's a bribery process, money exchanging hand, black market dealings. There must be all sorts going on, surely.
Yeah, 100%.
If I was them, I would run an online store and say, we'll deliver an anonymous cream egg to the player of your choice. And then, you know, your fans could send you little in-camp celebratory gifts. I feel like there is a whole tier to this that they haven't even started exploring.
I'll give them the proposition. They're up for new ideas and business plans, so I'll let them know.
It is Easter after all, and you guys are going to be witnessing everyone else getting loads of chocolate over the weekend every time you open your phone.
So, I think the thing is, at the moment, people are being cagey. You know, first week in camp, I don't need the chocolate. Give us 3 weeks, and people will be on the phone texting them. Yeah, bring the goods.
Are you girls cream egg girls or mini eggs? I'm so mini eggs over cream eggs. I mean,
I'm not a cream egg fan. I don't know about Kat.
No, not really. Like, mini eggs are better.
Mini eggs, way better. Way better.
I'm down for any kind of chocolate. I don't discriminate. Any iteration of, any version of, any size. As long as it's not white chocolate, we're in business. Let's talk a bit more rugby while we've got you guys here. So now, Kat, let's talk about France and the way they've performed historically, since we did get off the France topic there, but I feel like we haven't finalized all of this yet. What is it that they could do now to make this their Six Nations to really be proud of in terms of pitching up and consistency? But clearly the men's team seem to have, to a certain extent, bar the waffles, sorted out.
I think it comes down to kind of being just a bit more clinical, because they have really exciting play. They've got good pack leaders. And I think whichever nine they're playing, Sansus has been like phenomenal, scoring tries. And I love that they try things like the little kind of chip and chasing behind that maybe isn't actually on when you look at it, but they just make it work. But I think under those key pressure moments, and in the game, kind of the Autumn Internationals, where Skaz saved the day with the kick right at the last play, and they gave that penalty away, and that was all just on pressure. All they had to do was ride it out, but they just started to try and speed up the game. They weren't clinical, and then obviously, if you give the England players a chance to kind of take the lead in the last second of the game, they're going to take it. And well done, Skaz, nailed it. But so I think just that, I think they lose their heads slightly. But actually, when you look at them as a product, as a team, they have got it all, because they have a really good set piece. They've got great backs now with like pace. I mean, Jessie Tremulie, I can't say it, but she's insane. Her footwork, everything pace-wise. And so they've definitely got the whole package, but fine-tuning it, keeping their heads, discipline, and kind of being clinical.
I'm just going through the teams here. Ireland, the interesting one there, they beat Italy in the autumn. Italy's in your pool, Emily. What are we expecting from Ireland in the Six Nations, Kat?
I think, again, they're another team that have kind of been building, and a lot of stuff behind the scenes. You see the girls kind of tweeting about their camps, and there kind of seems to be a real good feel around it. They're a team predominantly that I would say are more pack driven, so I think it'll kind of suit them coming back into kind of normal laws. They've underperformed the last couple of years, so I think they'll be looking to try and kind of rectify that, but it does look like they have sorted things out and they are on the up, so obviously they'll be looking for a strong campaign.
With Ireland, as we spoke about with Scotland, they have a decent amount of players playing in Allianz Premiership, don't they? Quite a few girls at Wasps, Malloy, Cleena Maloney, like there's some proper players, and they've been going so well for their club. So it's just how they take that and translate that onto the international scene. I think you're right. Again, like we said, Ireland, Scotland, Italy all still haven't qualified for the World Cup. So actually, what does that look like? What's their preparation like? Are they really trying to, you know, squeeze? I don't know if the dates have been announced for when those World Cup qualifiers are, but you know, obviously they're really driving towards that, whereas potentially, obviously, Wales, us and France have already qualified, so does it look slightly different? It's, you know, sometimes you can argue mindsets change because of what you're aiming towards, but I think Wales for me is a really interesting one. They've got a brand new coach, Warren Abrahams. I worked with him playing sevens. He's a brilliant guy, very out of the box. He will challenge Wales in a way that they've never been challenged before, and I think it's really exciting. Potentially too soon to really see the fruits of the labour as such in terms of this Six Nations, because he's not had a huge amount of time with them. But I think that's a really exciting prospect, because Wales have got some phenomenal players. Again, loads of them we see week in, week out in the Prem. And again, how can they translate that back to their club?
It's going to be interesting, because I was reading an article on the, obviously Scotland and Italy are playing in that World Cup qualifier, and the article was sort of questioning, will they not reveal their cards in the Six Nations? But surely that's not really what you want. And that's not how players think about it, is it? You just go hammer to tong and then you'll do it again in a World Cup qualifier. Surely they still want to win that game. They're not going to go, oh, we're not going to do these moves, or we're going to play this way so that when we play them in the World Cup qualifier, we shock them. I mean, that just doesn't happen, does it?
I think I've definitely been part of teams where you've done both, obviously not in the same scenario as such, but I think I've definitely played in games where you don't want to show your full hand. But then at the same time, you've got to know that it works. So you kind of have to. And actually, you know, if you back what you're doing, teams have still got to stop it. That is a really interesting matchup for me, that Italy-Scotland game. It's obviously not the actual World Cup qualifier, but it's going to be a repeat of it. And I think both teams will be up for that, because whatever the result, although that doesn't mean, you know, one team qualifies, one team doesn't, but it's definite
confidence, isn't it, going into the...
Exactly. That makes such a huge difference. You think for both of those sides, especially Scotland, especially, they're riding pretty high at the moment. They probably wish they'd have continued to be playing after that France game, but... Yeah, it'll be a really good watch.
And that's what's interesting here, is because of the fact that last year Six Nations had this huge long gap in the middle, and you had a few games in the autumn. Now you've had some Premier 15s action. Some players are coming into this really kind of match fit with quite a bit of momentum. Some teams will really be drawing on that. And the question is, you know, for Scotland that drew against France, how much of that kind of really comes through? Talk to me about the video analysis you've been doing in terms of preparing for these guys. How long in advance have you been working on the stuff that doesn't happen on the pitch, Emily?
Yeah, so I suppose as individuals, it's kind of up to you. I think, you know, the footage has been available for a good couple of weeks, but obviously we've been on very much on club duty as well, and lots of us have big roles to play that analysis and stuff as well. But yeah, this week, obviously, we've gone through stuff. We've gone through it as kind of subunits, backs and forwards, as a team, different sides of the ball, attack, defence. So there's loads of work that goes into it, looking at opportunities for us, looking at, you know, areas that we need to be really tight on or be aware of, certain, you know, the way that their pictures look so that we can identify them, all that sort of stuff. And then obviously people do their individual work as well, those one-on-one matchups, you know, does our fullback know how their 10 kicks and all that sort of stuff. So there's a lot of work that goes on. I think you probably take it for granted once you're in and amongst it now, because it's just something that keeps happening and you put on repeat week in, week out. But I think that side of the game has probably stepped up perhaps from, you know, what it used to be.
Has it been like, is it, so if I go back, you know, to the black and white days when I played, yeah, you used to walk into your team, have you got a team room at the moment? Is that allowed in COVID times? I don't even know.
We have got a team room, but it's not quite set up how it would normally be set up, yeah.
Because we used to walk in and you'd have computers in the back, which had individuals that you could go watch individuals, your opposite numbers if you wanted, how they carried a ball, do they normally carry left hand, right hand, two hand, who, what's their better side to fend with? Is that sort of stuff still prevalent with you girls? Do they break it down into that detail, or is that something that's always still working towards?
Yeah, we're still working towards. We've only got one analyst, bless him. So he has a lot of stuff to get through. Obviously, the coaches ask a lot of him in terms of coding lots of things. So we don't necessarily have access to that sort of stuff. But obviously, we have access to all of the footage whereby we can do that sort of stuff ourselves. And it's probably been the case for a little while. Definitely the professional era for us has put a huge, much bigger emphasis on that side of things. You know, it is our job. We do have time to do that sort of stuff. I think it was probably very easy for us in the past to be like, oh, I'm so busy, I've got work, I've got this, and, da, 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 and maybe neglected that sort of stuff potentially a bit more. But definitely as a professional athlete now, that's something you've got to be pretty hot on.
Yet, is there a sense of, you know, since you are watching players like Emily carry on the work that you used to be part of, that you are kind of nervously excited for where they take this, because they're really picking up momentum in terms of the amount of media coverage and attention, the professionalisation of women's rugby, as Emily alludes to the fact that video analysis and these things now, I mean, that's part of the meat and bones of what you do when this is your job.
It's huge. And I remember having a moment when, you know, it was the first game, the England-France games that were on BBC, and I was being paid to commentate on rugby, women's rugby that, you know, I'd been part of, I'd played, I'd gone from the start, I'd done amateur, I'd done, well, not the start, not quite that old, but, you know, I'd kind of gone through the kind of phases of it, and I just was like, this is incredible. And things like this, like Skaz has got her own podcast, like that's cool, and kind of things like this have to happen, and it's brilliant. And I think there's so many more female strong role models within rugby that people are just getting to see more of and getting to know and talk about. And, you know, when you see teams of, oh, tag your top players, everyone all like or tries, it's generally always everybody assumes men's, but that's not the case anymore. There will be tags of female players and from people that are just watching the game more. So it is really exciting to see, and I love it when players are sponsored and you kind of see them everywhere, and I just think it's great, and I just think it's only going to get even bigger, which is just amazing and such a great thing to see.
The most exciting thing for me this Six Nations, which is new for us, is that there's a women's fantasy league.
Yes.
So good. I don't know if anyone's setting up a league or got involved with it, but that's class, because we've done an in-house one before with the men and whatnot, but to actually have one for us, I mean, I don't know whether we'll do it. I don't know how that would work. But yeah, I just think that's super cool.
I almost did the most fan thing ever. I read someone's fantasy team, you know, kind of who you should include in your team. And it went, Emily Scarrett, this is no brainer. I almost screen grabbed and sent it to the group. And I was like, okay, cool, 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 cool. we're friends now. You don't do that kind of thing. but that is so rad.
I mean, it's cool. I think it's just great that how everything's changing and how everything is going forward. It's just, as long as we can keep this momentum. I was going to ask Kat, do you wish, were you happy in the period that you played? Obviously, I know you didn't quite finish on, you didn't finish on how you would want it to have finished, but happy with that period, or would you take yourself back and go, I actually really wish I was playing in this period, or how exciting it looks and how it's going to go forward?
It's definitely exciting, and the TV coverage and all that, those bits and pieces are so much better now. But I don't know, because I did really like that it was kind of, because there were like hard times. There were times where we'd, you know, we went to, I think we played three games in a week or something like that, because we went off to Euros, came back, played a club game, and then had to do Super League. And you kind of did all this kind of stuff, and you kind of forget the kind of hell that we went through. But actually, it was all part of it. And I think that the kind of, it kind of bonds you together as well when you all go through stuff that's, you know, I mean, that's really part of it kind of towards the beginning of your career. Like, we did some kind of awful things and had to survive and get through it. But it meant that the downtime in camp was so fun and you shared those experiences. But honestly, it probably answers that question. Yeah, I'd love to still be playing now and it would be amazing. But like Skaz says earlier, here's what it is. So I kind of support it and hopefully commentate.
Those dark times generally, they bring funny times always, because the dark humour, when you turn up and there's no one to move your stuff around and you're just like, what are we? Yeah, I, even in my very early days in the late 90s, yes, I know I look a lot younger. What are you laughing for? it was still the same when we weren't professional at all. We were classed as professional, but it's changed a lot since then.
Well, I remember going to a sevens tournament and the bus just basically refused to take us up the hill, and so we were all dragging our own bag plus a kit bag plus a load of other stuff, and we were just dragging them up this hill, and we're like, we are England players. It's like midnight, we arrive and the hotel doesn't have any food, because they were like, oh no, you're late, you can't have any. And then so we're training the next day, we haven't eaten, we're dragging, and just but moments like that, and again, they're funny. And Claire Allen, one of the players, was always one of the ones who, in moments like that, would just make you laugh so much. And actually, those are a lot of the times that I remember and weirdly miss from playing. Because, like, yeah, as you say, from dark times, you always get the funny ones. Yeah,
Claire Allen needs to write a book, doesn't she? Claire Allen needs to write a book. It would be unbelievable.
But it would be. So, because that is the evolution of the sport and what you need to hear. I mean, fortunately, when I joined England, you know, Clive had already sort of taken it to another level, which was why it was good. But club rugby still, like, you're going to compete in the European Cup or whatever, the Premier Cup, or you're staying in a Formula 1 or whatever hotel in France, and you walk in and all they've got is gum bleeder and one piece of ham, and literally that is it. And you've got supposedly one of the biggest games of your career for some people the next day, and you literally enter the field dehydrated, just starving, and you've just got to get through it. But the comedy that comes out of it, it's so you're literally staying on the busiest four-lane motorway on the side of a road, and if you want to go to Burger King across the road, you've got to make a chicken run across the motorway. But they're the stories that make the game great as well.
Isn't there a version of this happening? I mean, Emily, this season and the COVID disruption that you guys had in 2020, you are going to look back at this a few years from now and go, remember when we were in camp and we were in a bubble and we couldn't go anywhere? And then they set up this little tuck shop, like a little internal system. What are the coping mechanisms that are different now? That's the stuff that you've been doing at the moment it feels like, oh, we can't have a proper team room set up. None of the stuff is the way it should be. We can't have fans. But you might look back on and go, oh, shame, that was actually really unique.
Yeah, it's definitely different, and I've no doubt we'll look back on it, but like the good times and the tough times. But I just go back to what the guys are saying. I love the stories. Like when we get together, Claire Allen is my case in point. She's the best example of this. Like they're the ones you reflect on. I remember her 30th. We went to Butlins. It was when she was actually about 35. But anyway, we went to Butlins and there was a really good group of us. And that whole weekend, we just reminisced on kind of things that happened 5-10 years ago. Some of it was rugby related. Most of it wasn't. Most of it was whilst at rugby, but the nights out or the things that happened after the tournaments. You know, Mike's smiling because he knows exactly what I'm talking about. Kat was involved in lots of them. They're the bits that you just love. COVID is different. It's very different. You know, we don't have stories of nights out and things to tell, but we'll have slightly different stories. But that's why I love rugby. And it's definitely changed. Some of the things that Kat and I could talk about compared to perhaps some of the things that have happened more recently, they're different. Obviously, the professional era has put a halt to some of that. But it's definitely been fun.
I was just thinking France, where you always go down for breakfast and they give you the hard-boiled eggs that you've got to drop with that little fucking silver thing, spoon into the hot water, and you've got to time your own eggs, and you just like never get it right. There's just shell everywhere. Oh, it's just, yeah, France.
Well, we went to China with a sevens tournament, and it was like the whole tournament was just crazy, and just everything there was kind of, I remember looking at the food, opened one tray, fish heads, all right, no thanks. no middle, just those bits. But then so it'd been horrific. We were really tired, and we were at the airport, and Lydia Thompson came up to me, and she was like, tears in her eyes, and I was like, you're right, mate. And she went, I've just seen someone with a bag of dead rats. Like, she just burst out crying. And I was like, yeah, sums it up. And we're like, let's get out of here. Like, it's just one of those tournaments. It's just kind of...
Taxi!
Yeah, exactly. Go, go, go. But yeah, a suitcase of dead rats. So that's a new one.
Worms.
Wow. Okay. I thought I've heard some things about food on tour, but that is next level. Yeah, on that tasty note, don't miss any of this weekend's Women's Six Nations action. It's going to be great, and I'm so excited to see the Red Roses against Scotland at 3 p.m. UK time Saturday afternoon. Our superstar Emily Scarrett in action. Thank you so much, Kat, for joining us. It was lovely to have you on the show.
Cool. Thank you very much, and carve up on the weekend, Scars. Good luck.
Thanks, bud.
Okay, thanks, Mike, as well. That's it for the good, the Scars, and the rugby, together with our friends at Allianz. We have some good, bad rugby that you need to watch, because Wayne Pivac joined Mike and James and Alex this week and had a really interesting chat about exactly what it's like winning the Six Nations when you can't really have a team celebration to win it with. We'll be back next week with England prop Shauna Brown, who is also a qualified gas engineer and commercial diver. So there is just, I mean, there's so much to talk about here besides the opening round weekend of the Women's Six Nations. Thanks again for your company. We'll be back with another one of these in 7 days' time. Goodbye.